Welcome back to The Deep Dive. Today, we're really getting into something quite unique, looking at how a long-standing spiritual community, the Franciscan Sisters of Allegheny, is tackling organizational change.
Yeah, it's fascinating. Our mission, for you listening, is to unpack how they're proposing to change their leadership and governance, drawing on feedback from sisters across four countries, Brazil, Jamaica, Bolivia, and the U.S. We want to map out those proposals and the deeper desires behind them.
And what's great is the material we have. These aren't just quick surveys. We're working from these really detailed synthesis documents. They pull together feedback from lots of group discussions in each place.
It's just like we get a real-time view of their thinking.
Exactly. You can see where everyone agrees, but also where these, you know, interesting regional differences pop up. It's quite rich data.
Okay, so let's dive in. A big starting point for them seems to be this concept of wisdom circles. What exactly are these meant to be?
Well, the general idea is that they're these groups designed to foster spiritual growth, build a more inclusive community life, encourage dialogue between cultures, and importantly, help with collective decision-making.
This is pretty foundational, really.
It does. But what's striking is how differently they were received region by region.
Oh, how so?
Well, in Brazil and Jamaica, you see really strong, enthusiastic support. They view these wisdom circles as like absolutely vital, really essential.
Okay, high enthusiasm there. What about elsewhere?
Then you look at the United States, and it's much more of a mixed reaction. Leaning a bit skeptical, actually.
Skeptical? Why?
Some sisters there felt they might be redundant, maybe too complex. They kind of preferred the cluster structures they already had.
The familiar structure.
Right. Though it's fair to say, even in the U.S., others did see value, particularly for getting more grassroots involvement. And Bolivia. They were sort of expressing uncertainty, kind of waiting for more details.
Interesting spectrum. So, given these different feelings, did common ideas emerge about how to make them work if they were to go forward?
Yes, definitely. Some pragmatic points came through loud and clear. One was flexibility participation should be voluntary, not forced.
Makes sense.
Another big one was structure. Many suggested converting or, you know, restructuring existing teams into these wisdom circles. The idea was specifically to avoid having too many layers or duplicate efforts.
Efficiency matters, even here.
Absolutely. And crucially, they wanted autonomy. Each wisdom circle should pick its own coordinators, completely separate from the main congregational leadership team, the CLT.
Keeping that grassroots feel, maybe.
Seems like it. And they definitely encouraged using technology to make them cross-cultural, connecting sisters across regions, virtual meetings, that sort of thing.
And lay involvement, people who aren't sisters.
That came up too. Generally welcomed in Brazil and Jamaica, but handled with more caution in the U.S., especially when discussions touched on vowed life itself. There was a clear sense that lay people wouldn't step into those specific areas.
Okay, that sets up the wisdom circles. Now, you mentioned contrast. Let's talk about the other proposed structure.
Yeah.
The guiding team.
Right. And here, the picture is dramatically different. If wisdom circles had varied support, this guiding team idea faced, well, predominantly negative feedback across the board.
Really? All countries?
Pretty much. It was widely seen as just unnecessary, redundant, too complex, and critically, maybe not even sustainable given their, you know, demographic situation, fewer sisters overall.
So a strong preference for keeping things simpler.
Exactly. There's this real resistance to what feels like extra bureaucracy. If a layer doesn't add clear, undeniable value, especially in a community focused on a spiritual mission, it doesn't fly. They want governance to be lean and effective.
Was there any openness to it at all? Any nuance?
Well, if you dig in, Jamaica showed a little bit of cautious openness, but only if it was much smaller, maybe called an integrating team, and importantly, formed by the Wisdom Circle coordinators themselves. Again, separate from the CLT.
Ah, so still connecting back to that grassroots structure.
Precisely. Brazil and Bolivia. Very limited openness. They needed much more clarity on its purpose, but mostly they stayed skeptical. And the U.S. reaction was the strongest rejection.
Just a flat no.
Mostly. A tiny minority might have considered a very simplified team just for communication between wisdom circles, but the overwhelming feeling was, that's the job of the CLT already. Why add another body?
Okay, so wisdom circles get a mixed to positive reception with modifications. Guiding team gets a largely negative one. Was there anything that received, like, universal positive feedback?
Yes, absolutely. And it's a big one, lay participation. The idea of intentionally integrating lay people more formally into the congregation's work.
So that was embraced everywhere.
Strongly supported, enthusiastically even, across all countries. No mixed bag here.
And this is driven by practical needs, right?
Definitely. It's partly about the declining number of sisters, just the reality of their demographics, but it's also about needing specialized skills that maybe weren't as critical 50 years ago.
Like what kind of skills?
Well, think about it. Financial administration, needing a CFO, accountants. Healthcare is huge, especially coordinating elder care, memory care specialists, communications, digital media, PR essential today.
Things that keep any large organization running.
Exactly. Plus strategic planning, general administration, maybe an executive secretary. Also HR, property management, IT support, geriatric professionals, event planning. The list is quite extensive.
It sounds like a significant shift.
Yeah.
But you mentioned boundaries earlier.
Crucial point. There's a very clear, unanimous boundary. Lay people should not take on canonical roles or roles tied directly to vowed life. Those functions that are specific to being a professed religious sister or part of the order's internal religious law that's off limit.
A non-negotiable line.
Absolutely. But interestingly, even with the practical need and the clear boundaries, the documents noted some emotional hesitancy, even grief.
Freeze.
Yeah, particularly noted among U.S. sisters. You have to imagine roles traditionally held by sisters for generations now potentially shifting to lay people out of necessity. It's a pragmatic adjustment, but it hits an emotional chord for some.
That's understandable. A real transition.
Very much so. And Brazil smartly emphasized doing this gradually, you know, respecting the sister's own pace of discernment and adjustment.
Right. So shifting gears again, let's look at the top. The Congregational Leadership Team, the CLT, how do they see that evolving?
Here we see another interesting split driven by different regional priorities.
Okay.
The U.S., Jamaica, and Bolivia, they strongly favor a smaller CLT. Think four or five sisters elected at their main chapter meeting.
And the thinking there?
Simplicity.
Yeah.
Flexibility, minimal bureaucracy. They want an agile team that can act without getting, you know, bogged down in layers.
Makes sense. What's the other view?
Brazil prefers a somewhat larger team, maybe 7 or 8 members total.
Why larger?
Their model includes the 4 or 5 elected sisters, plus regional ministers from Brazil, Jamaica, and the U.S. It's about ensuring direct regional representation at the top, and it also reflects some specific legal requirements they have locally.
Ah, legal necessity is playing a role too.
Yes, that point about needing regional ministers, often due to legal or canonical reasons, was actually pretty widely supported across the board, even by those wanting a smaller core elected team.
So how do the regions themselves fit in, these regional leadership teams or RLTs?
It gets a bit more complicated here. Jamaica, for instance, feels very strongly about having its own distinct regional leadership team
mm-hmm.
with real governance roles. They're even experimenting with shared lay leadership within that Jamaican RLT.
So they want clear regional authority.
Yes, and they explicitly don't want their regional representation just folded into the central CLT or some guiding team. They want their own defined structure.
Interesting. What about the U.S. and Bolivia?
The U.S. response is really varied. Some like the idea of formal regional ministers, but others prefer just informal liaisons, maybe called personnel coordinators.
Mm-hmm.
Generally, there's skepticism about having a formal RLT within the U.S. itself. They seem to prefer virtual meetings for coordination.
Less formal structure there.
Seems like it. Bolivia tends to support regional autonomy and flexibility, and they propose something interesting. Periodic extended CLT meetings, basically bringing regional leaders together with the central CLT occasionally as a way to integrate globally.
So lots of different ideas on structure. How did they suggest connecting all these pieces?
Technology is key. Regular virtual meetings, Zoom was mentioned between the CLT and the different regions. And those periodic extended CLT meetings, which Jamaica and Brazil also recommended, are seen as important for collaboration.
Okay, so we've covered wisdom circles, the guiding team, lay roles, CLT structure, regional dynamics. Beneath all this structural discussion, was there a deeper underlying theme that emerged?
Oh, absolutely. And it was powerful across every country. Consistently, there was this strong emphasis, this deep desire for genuine spiritual transformation, guided by their Franciscan charism, by the Holy Spirit.
So more than just moving boxes on an org chart.
Much more. A real recognition that changing structures isn't enough. The real change has to be spiritual, personal, communal. It's about deepening their identity, not just reorganizing operations.
That feels central. So what shared hopes or aspirations really underpin all these different structural debates?
Well, you definitely see that desire for simpler, more flexible governance. That's clear. but also a really strong commitment to inclusivity, to leading relationally, to fostering that intercultural dialogue.
Right, lay participation fits into that.
Yes, intentionally integrating laity within those clear boundaries and with ongoing formation.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this emphasis on facing their demographic reality. Fewer sisters, aging members, not with fear, but with openness, hope, and creativity.
Finding new ways forward.
Exactly. And finally, underpinning it all, a call for renewed clarity about their core mission and for deeper spiritual discernment in every decision they make, big or small.
So wrapping this up for your listener, we've really journeyed through a complex, fascinating landscape here.
Mm-hmm.
Organizational design, cultural nuances, deep spiritual hopes.
Yeah, from the enthusiasm for wisdom circles in some regions to that near universal rejection of the guiding team concept.
Mm.
And the clear practical need for lay involvement balanced with that careful boundary setting.
It's quite a story of adaptation.
And I think the biggest takeaway connecting it all is that powerful desire for authentic spiritual transformation, not just change for change's sake. It really shows how, even when you're talking governance and structure, the deepest values of a community are what truly drive its path forward. It demands more than just a new plan on paper.
So your mission, should you choose to accept it, mull this over. What can you learn from how the Franciscan Sisters are navigating change while trying to stay true to who they are? How does balancing core principles with diverse local needs apply to challenges you might face in your work, your community, maybe even just in your own life?
Keep digging, keep exploring.
And we'll catch you on the next deep dive.